Welcome to Real Money Radio, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. Here's your host, certified financial planner, David Holland.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Boy, I tell you what, I'm excited about this program today because we had a guest on not long ago. I said, please, 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 please come back. And he did. Art Markham, PhD. Annabelle Worsham, Centennial Professor of Psychology and Marketing at University of Texas in Austin. He's the founding director of the program in Human Dimensions of Organizations. And the program brings humanities and social behavior sciences to people in business, which is welcome because we need that over here in the business world. And the book, Smart Change, 5 Tools to Create New and Sustainable Habits in Yourself and Others. That's the latest book out, smartthinkingbook.com. And Art is back because he's a really smart guy, and I like the way he thinks. I like the way he writes. I follow him all over the social media. And we had so much in our last interview, we couldn't get to all of it. So we said, please come back, Art. We'd like to have you back. And he said, yes, he would. So, Art, welcome back to the program.
Well, thanks, David. It's great to be back.
Well, I'm glad to have you. PhD, University of Illinois.
That's
and
right.
All kinds. I mean, we could. I only have 27 minutes, so I can't read all of this broad range of deep background. I'll tell the listeners, Art, that he's got the goods, and you do. So we appreciate your taking some time with us. Can we pick up what last left off? You know, we were talking about your book and the Smart Change and how these tools, you know, 5 tools to create new and sustainable habits in yourself and others. And, you know, we got into so many things, but we couldn't get to all of it. So I asked Art, let's come back and talk some more. Let's dive in. What are some of the major factors that determine happiness? Because I felt like that's kind of where we left it last time.
Yeah. You know, happiness is a fascinating thing. Because it's all over the press these days. Everybody's decided that they're supposed to be happy and they're supposed to be happy all the time.
Correct.
And I think that there's two components about happiness that rarely enter into the discussions that we see in the media. The first is to bear in mind that if you look overall at people's happiness, about 50% of the happiness people experience is genetically determined. The differences between people. So, you know, we all know some people are happy, some people less happy, and that seems to be in the genes. You know, and if you look at the other 50%, some of it is the circumstance that they're in right now, and some of it is really an attitudinal orientation towards things.
Which might be born out of their life experiences.
Yeah. And so part of what that means is that, you know, what we should do in life is to set a goal to feel as much fulfillment as we can from the events that we have. But if you look around and you think, gosh, you know, there are some people out there who are just a lot happier than I am, don't let that be another source of
unhappiness
for you.
That's ironic.
That's right. But you can actually get into these spirals
in which
you actually take yourself out of a good mood because you feel like your good mood isn't as good as it should be. So that's one piece of it. But before we run off, I want to mention a second piece, because this is particularly important in the business world.
Right.
I hear a lot of people in business say to me, look, I'm really stressed all the time at work, and gosh, I wish I was happy. How can I get rid of the stress and be happy? And it turns out that the emotion that you experience at any given moment depends a lot on the motivation that you have. And something that we touched on last time is that there's a difference in the motivational system between approach and avoidance. So approach is the desirable stuff that we want to do in our lives, the you know, making good friends, achieving something great at work, you know, having a good meal. Those are desirable things, and that engages our approach motivation. And then there's avoidance motivation, where we're trying to avoid a calamity, whether it's avoiding having a fight with a spouse or partner, or whether it's avoiding financial problems, or whether it's actually avoiding physical danger. And it turns out that when you are experiencing an avoidance motivational state, the most common emotion you experience is stress and fear.
That makes sense.
Because you're worried about calamity.
Right.
So if you're constantly stressed in your workplace, what that means is that you live your work life trying constantly to avoid a problem. And what that means is the positive emotion that's associated with avoidance behavior is relief. right? You've lived another day,
right,
and you haven't had a calamity.
I survived.
So what does that mean for us? It means if we're stressed, we're under avoidance motivation, and the best possible outcome at the end of each day is relief. And I don't know anybody who wants to come home from work just so that they can get home and go, survived another day. So if you want to experience joy and happiness and fulfillment, one of the things that means is you need to look at your work life and ask yourself, where are the approach goals? Where are the desirable things that I could do in my life that I can really strive for? Because it is in the striving for those positive things and in achieving some of those positive things that I actually end up experiencing those moments of happiness, those moments of fulfillment. And so if you're constantly stressed at work, there's no direct path from stress to happiness. You have to change that motivational orientation first and start focusing yourself on the really desirable outcomes rather than on avoiding calamity.
Wow. There's like 65 or 70,000 talking points there. That was really good. That was great, Art. I mean, you know, there's no direct path from stress to happiness.
Yeah, exactly.
You
right.
Put that on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
That's good. No, that's good. In fact, that needs to be your tagline. No, I like that because, and as you, of course, as you're talking, I'm you know, of course, processing it and putting it into my own little world and how I, what motivates me and gets me excited when I come into work is because I am sucked into that approach incentive cycle that I'm looking forward to helping somebody with their finances. And I think I can do, you know, I had a woman I was just going to visit with and I know I can help her and I'm excited about meeting with her.
Yeah.
That makes me feel good. I mean, right. I'm looking forward to helping her, but part of why I'm looking forward to help her is I feel good about seeing her and solving her problem.
That's right. And of course, for her, a lot of her financial issues are creating stress. They're creating this concern about losing money, about not having enough to retire on, all those kinds of things. And so one of the things that people need to do, you know, people want to say, I want to stop worrying about money. Well, one way to do that is to really be focused on the wonderful things you have. And not on all of the things that are going wrong, which is not to say that anyone should ignore the dangers that are out there, right? We need to be, you know, there's a reason why we have both an approach and an avoidance motivational system. And so, you know, if your life is only happiness, you know, you're probably ignoring some of the things that could go wrong in life. You want a balance. But I think there's a lot of people out there whose lives are dominated by stress. And that really requires a change.
And I suppose there are some that are on the other side of that yin-yang model where they are, you know, dominated by happiness. And so the natural question that our listeners have, Art, is how can I get to that happy place? You know, and I because again, they're in a place of stress. And according to your perfect quote, there's no direct path from stress to happiness. So how do they unwind and then wind back up to a more of a happy orientation?
Yeah. Well, the very first thing that's important for people to do is to begin to look at their lives and figure out what are the things that are out there that they're trying to avoid.
Mm.
So, you know, one of the things that happens to a lot of people is that they frame their entire life in terms of responsibilities, in terms of the things that they ought to do in life.
Mm.
Now, the thing about responsibilities is that they are almost all focused on things where you feel like if I don't do this, something's going to go wrong.
Hmm.
Everything's going to collapse without me. And I think that while we all do have some responsibilities, when we focus ourselves just on those responsibilities, then we do create that avoidance orientation. And so one of the things you have to ask yourself is, well, what are some of the positive moments that might be associated with the things that you do that may result in your carrying out your responsibilities? So, for example, a lot of people get very stressed about parenting, you know, and that's because they feel like, well, it's an awesome responsibility to be a parent, and it is. I've got three kids. I understand that.
Oh, yeah.
But you know, if you don't take the time to enjoy the beautiful moments of parenting, you know, watching your kid taking steps or performing in a play at school or just having fun doing homework or just hanging out with your kids and letting them run all over the yard while you watch, if you don't engage in those moments and find the positive moments in there, then you are doing yourself a disservice of focusing only on the avoidance aspect of things. And so I think it's important to figure out, what is it? What are those responsibilities that are weighing you down? What are those calamities that you're worried about? And are there silver linings in them? Are there things that you can find in them that are actually the desirable components, and really to extract that silver lining out of every cloud?
Good stuff, Art. Love it. Art Markman, ladies and gentlemen, PhD. And he has written the book, Smart Change, 5 Tools to Create New and Sustainable Habits in Yourself and Others. And you see why, or you hear why, we invited Art back. So let's grab a quick break. We'll come right back and talk more with Art. Stay right there.
Are you looking for a trustworthy local advisor for your investment and retirement planning, but you're not sure how or where to begin? Start by looking for a certified financial planner practitioner. Visit www.cfp.net to search for an advisor in your local area who's earned this highly regarded professional certification. Pick 3 CFP practitioners. Set an appointment and interview them. Ask questions. Listen carefully to their answers. Check references and research their firms with the Better Business Bureau. This PSA is brought to you by Holland Financial, who wants to help you to plan stronger. For more information, call 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com.
And we are excited to be back with Dr. Art Markman and the book. You heard me talk about it. I think it's a great read. Smart Change, 5 Tools to Create New and Sustainable Habits in Yourself and Others. SmartThinkingBook.com. And, you know, I had a kind of a little miniature epiphany for you, Art, that I want to get you. You know, I kind of try to process this in my own way. And I'm thinking about, you know, these two different balancing points, one of the avoidance that are associated with some of these stressful things and that avoidance behavior and the causing of stress, and the hormones that are released by stress are what? Adrenaline?
Adrenaline in the short term,
yeah.
Sure, and then cortisol in the long term.
Which is not good.
Right.
Our body doesn't do well with gobs of and lots of either one. So that's that flight or flight response we all know about. But then over on the positive side, and that was what did you call that? It was the other A word?
That's the approach system.
The approach system. Well, then that creates happy, and it clicked to me that that's associated with release of endorphins.
Endorphins, dopamine, yeah.
All the good stuff.
Yeah.
So we've got those two. We're on drugs either way. So let's get on the good ones.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, unless you're trying to run from a tiger.
Right? Well, yeah, sure.
You know,
no, I don't want to have endorphins then. Hey, it's a happy tiger.
Woohoo! Look, it's a bear.
Yeah. You know, if you were describing stress, I had a bear in my mind. I don't know what that means, but I had that pop into my head. I'm like, yeah, that's not good.
Must be the financial guy in you.
I'm worried about a bear market. Thank you. Thanks for that. Hey, how much for that, Doc? I didn't even know I was on the couch.
Today.
That was good. No, it's funny. I mean, you know, it's in our brains. All right. So striving to be positive, that's where we want to be. And again, kind of doing that self-assessment and reevaluation. Now, but there's also a social component. And let's kind of, you know, dig a little deeper and maybe tie this more directly to money and finances. There's a social component or comparison that we make with money and how that might affect our happiness. You know, there's a lot of relativity that comes into our views about money, about how much we have. You know, the old cliche of keeping up with the Joneses.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you are surrounded by people that all have a lot more than you do, you know, that could definitely affect, you know, your own personal satisfaction on what you've accomplished.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, like it or not, we are a social species, and so part of the way that we figure out how we stand mm-hmm. in society is by making these kinds of social comparisons. And whenever you make what's called a downward social comparison, where you are comparing yourself to people who are below you on some dimension, it generally makes you feel better. Whenever you make an upward social comparison, where you're comparing yourself to people who have more than you on something, whether it's money or talent or whatever, you tend to feel worse about yourself. Now, in the case of money, social comparison can really get you into trouble
mm-hmm.
when you perform these upward social comparisons. So, for example, there was a study that got done not long ago looking at where people live. And so if you live in the biggest house in your neighborhood, which realtors will tell you that's bad because your house isn't going to be worth as much. But from a financial happiness standpoint, having the biggest house in the neighborhood makes you feel good because it promotes this kind of downward social comparison all the time. Because everyone that you look at is not as well off as you are. Having the smallest house in a more desirable neighborhood, where you're surrounded by people who have more than you do, have more money than you do, makes you feel worse about yourself, even though, again, from a real estate standpoint, maybe your house will the value will hold up more. And so, you know, even the location you're in can promote these kinds of social comparisons. So, yeah, you gotta really watch out for that. And I think that one of the things that all of us need to do is to remember that while social comparison is a natural thing for us to do, that it is kind of important to take a step back and to ask yourself, how am I doing independent of everybody else?
That's tough.
Yeah, it is very tough to do. But if you look at, you know, there's an interesting set of studies that have been done worldwide on happiness. So if you ask people in different countries how happy they are, generally speaking, there's a moderate correlation between the wealth of the nation and happiness, which you would sort of expect because people who are living in severe poverty have a lot of problems that they have to deal with, and that's going to impact how happy that they are. The interesting thing is there are a number of countries, Mexico being one, where their data point is not where it should be given the wealth of the nation overall. So people in Mexico are much happier than they ought to be just based on their overall wealth. And you can ask, well, what's going on in that kind of situation? And it turns out that in the countries that are happier than they ought to be, you have people who have very strong family ties, who really are spending their time and their energy with loved ones and doing the things that they really enjoy doing, rather than striving all the time for material good.
The focus has shifted.
That's right. And one of the other things that we know about money and happiness is that buying memories is better than buying stuff.
Yeah.
So when you put all that together, a lot of the things that you do to create that could create happy memories are things that don't necessarily need to cost a lot.
That's true.
I mean, the sunset is free. For now.
Well, you know, it actually, there were several things when you talk about that, Art, that kind of ran through my mind. And we talk about, you know, we look at this relative evaluation, and, you know, that it made me think of a couple of the cliches or quips that are out there. One of the things that people say, of course, is you know, especially in the business world, you know, only compete against yourself. Don't compete against, you know, the other person and where they are. You only need to compete against yourself. You only need to be against yourself. In other words, try to improve where you are, because, you know, I think that's intended to fight that potential downward spiral of comparing yourself to somebody else. Now, the other side of that, which is another little cliche, is what? Misery loves company.
Sure.
And my favorite, you'll like this one. It's a Yiddish proverb: with money in your pocket, you're handsome, you're witty, and you sing well too.
I love it.
Well, let's do this. Let's grab another break. We'll come back, and I want to talk about the importance of, you know, what you mentioned, Art, of buying memories, and why that's so much more, why that could give you so much more value for your buck, no pun intended. Art Markman, ladies and gentlemen, PhD. And he's written the book, Smart Change, 5 Tools to Create New and Sustainable Habits in Yourself and Others. And you see why he's back on the program, smartthinkingbook.com. Quick break. We'll be right back.
Retirement planning doesn't have to be hard, complicated, or stressful. It also doesn't have to be done in a hurry or with sales pressure. Since starting Holland Financial in 1997, it has been David Holland's mission to help individuals, couples, and families plan their futures with personalized financial planning. David puts himself in his client's shoes and recommends products and services he would choose for himself or his family. If you'd like to learn more about Holland Financial or to schedule a one-on-one consultation with David, simply call 671-PLAN. That's 671-PLAN. No cost or obligation. Or visit planstronger.com. Do you have financial questions you'd like answered on this show? Send them to questions@planstronger.com. You will remain anonymous.
And welcome back. Dr. Art Markman on the line with us, author, speaker, and professor of psychology and marketing at University of Texas, the Annabelle Worsham Centennial Professor. And we're very glad to have him back. He's written the book Smart Change, 5 Tools to Create New and Sustainable Habits in Yourself and Others, smartthinkingbook.com. And we started to get into something that I think is really it's a very interesting area, and that is you started talking, Art, about buying experiences versus things. And I know that my travel agent would be very, very happy to hear you say that. That those experience, and I agree, I do subscribe to it. The kids are still talking about one of the trips we took to Alaska and what we were able to do, and Dad did pay for some pretty cool experiences, and we're still reliving them.
Yeah.
So versus, you know, some of those things we buy that are gone, you know, here today, gone tomorrow.
Right. Well, you know, it's funny. Danny Kahneman, you know, who won the Nobel Prize in economics, but is actually a psychologist. He talked a lot years ago about what he called the hedonic treadmill, which is basically that, you know, if you think about your life, you're constantly thinking, well, if I just had X, whatever it is, and it could be a thing or it could be a degree. You know, people always decide that happiness is around the next bend in life. You know, if I could just get out of college, if I could just land a job, if I could just get that really nice car. You know, if we just get the house we want, if we could just get the living room refinished, you know, all of that stuff, then I'm going to be happy. And what he points out with this hedonic treadmill is that while you get a little bit happier after you buy a new possession, you adapt to it really quickly. And then that just becomes the way your life is. And now you start looking at the next thing, particularly when you make those kinds of social comparisons. Now it's getting a bigger house or the nicer car or whatever it is. And so you're constantly adapting to that. And that's one of the reasons why buying stuff isn't really that effective at making you happy in the long term, which is why the best predictor of how happy somebody's going to be 6 months after they win the lottery is how happy they were 6 months before they won the lottery.
Well, I was just thinking that as you described that, Art, that, you know, in that pursuit of these bigger chunks of temporary feel-goodness, that, you know, then in order to get to the next level, now enters stress to get to that point.
That's right. Because you're dissatisfied, you're worried that you're not going to achieve the thing you want, so you get stressed over having that, and that cycle continues. And the beauty of experiences is that those experiences, they stay with you. So, you know, if I wanted to make you happier right now, just a little bit happier, I could ask you to sit and write down for me 3 great memories from your life, or 3 times that somebody helped you to do something, or 3 times that you helped somebody else to do something.
Right.
And all of those positive memories will actually boost your mood. So having those positive memories available for you, that's a real source of happiness. So if you're going to try and curate your memory, if you're going to try and create memories for yourself, then the best way to do that is to take the money that you're going to spend on something and spend it on something that's going to ultimately help you to create some wonderful memories. And trips are certainly a wonderful way to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Buying objects that you're actually going to use in service of creating memories. So buying a bicycle that you're going to take to ride in a beautiful place. Is that's a good use of money where you're buying a thing. I mean, I play the saxophone. And so buying a nice saxophone that I can bring out and play in the blues band I play with, well, you know, I spent money on that, but I did it in service of all of these wonderful memories of standing on stage making good music.
That's cool.
So it's really about creating those memories because, you know, you always have those memories then afterwards. And as you pointed out in your example where you take the family on a trip, some of those memories are shared memories.
Right.
And they make it, they not only can you make yourself a little bit happier, but you can sit and reminisce with your family about the great vacation you took to Alaska. And your family is going to share in that with you, and that reinforces the good feeling. So it's a great way to spend money, rather than just accumulating a bunch of stuff where at some point you go in the garage and you think, gosh, I just got to get rid of some of this.
Right. Well, you know, it's interesting, Art, if we go back to your three tell me three things, experiences that you had that made you feel good and it boosts your mood. I'll go out on a limb here. I'll bet if you ask somebody to think of three things you bought and there may not be much of a mood boost at all. In fact, there might be a little bit of regret.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a very stark contrast.
That's exactly right. Exactly right. So you got to, money's a wonderful thing, but you want to spend it in ways that are really going to, have the greatest long-term impact on you.
Well, and just to kind of put a big bow around our conversation today, it's really about, and I'd love you to kind of give us a couple minutes on this, is that money becoming the goal rather than the means to an end. That's part of the, that treadmill that we see people sometimes get on, and they call it the rat race for a reason.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I should point out, right, that sometimes making these social comparisons, these upward social comparisons, even though they don't necessarily make you feel good in the moment, they can be really motivating.
Oh, sure.
Particularly early in your career, when you really want to, there's a place you really want to be later in your career because you feel like that's going to give you the opportunities to do the things you're going to enjoy in the long term. Making those upward social comparisons and thinking, I got to really motivate myself to work hard so I can be where I want to be, that's part of the delay of gratification that's so important in early in a career. The problem a lot of people have when it comes to money and jobs and careers is knowing when to shut that off.
Yeah.
Because, I think when you think about the proverbial midlife crisis where somebody ends up, getting divorced, buying a convertible and picking up a younger spouse, that a lot of what that reflects is that they never bother to shut off the striving
right.
for money, for status, for promotions, and to recognize that, it's time to sit back and enjoy life a little bit.
Well, Art, I think I've got it. You start out when you're early in your career, you rent next to people that are a big house, rich and talented, and then later in your career, move in next to poor, untalented people that live in small houses.
Yeah, and feel good about yourself.
And then go on a lot of vacations. And take a lot of vacations. All right, Art, we're out of time. Love having you on, Art Markman, PhD, ladies and gentlemen. The Smart Change, 5 Tools to Create New and Sustainable Habits in Yourself and Others. It's a good read, and it's a serious read, but you'll get a lot out of it. SmartThinkingBook.com. Thank you, Art. Enjoyed having you. We'll do it again.
David, that was great. Looking forward to talking to you again.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Granada Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland, or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions.